Good afternoon, and welcome to Everybody, the podcast which shares stories that highlight people in life that make the world an interesting place, which ultimately ties us all together in unique and wonderful ways. And who am I, you might ask? I would be the head-wrapped socialite, wife, mom, micro-influencer in the fashion and etiquette world. But on this podcast, I will be introducing you to some people who I've had the opportunity to meet along my journey, who have helped enrich me and my life in beautiful ways, and who I hope will do the same in yours. Today's special guest is Amber Lucas Brown, a fashion designer, a creative, someone who's worked in the world of fashion for over 30 plus years. She's also a connector of people. So I'd like you all to welcome my friend and sister, Amber Lucas Brown. Thank you, Amber, for joining us on today's episode. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Trina. It's exciting to be here.
Could you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are?
Oh, boy. A little bit about who I am. I actually took that upon myself once upon a time to write down who I thought I was. Mm-hmm. And I have it sitting in a little frame, a little piece of paper sitting in a frame on my desk. And I try to turn around and look at that every so often because I wear many hats, not only, you know, my own personal love of design and creating things and building things, et cetera, but mom and wife and all these good things. So I am the strategist. I am the bottom line, get it done kind of gal who comes from a background of people who always had that kind of moniker in their lives. I come from a family of super achievers, but I also carry with me the bloodline of a lot of creative people. And so over the course of years, I've had the opportunity to be influenced and encouraged by family members who I've seen in industrial design, interior design. I had an uncle who was just an incredible artist by nature who passed away as a freshman in college, but I still have his artwork. Mm-hmm. So my path has taken me from, you know, being the kid with the little weaving loom thing and pottery wheel plastic and, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of crazy things like that that parents buy you when you're little, mm-hmm. all the way to design school at Rhode Island School of Design, where I met you, Trina, across the street at Johnson & Wales.
Amber, how did you know you were creative?
Oh, my goodness. What a question. How did I know I was creative? Whew. Long as I can remember, I always made things. And I think one of my greatest talents and abilities is basically is problem solving. Like mm-hmm. the way that my mind puts things together is not often the way other people's do.
Yeah.
And so, or the way that I see things visually, I don't mean like see things in general, but you know, when I walk into a room, I see something different, I think, than other people may. Mm-hmm. So I am this interesting amalgam of scholarly pursuits and creativity all put together.
Do you remember one of your earliest creations?
I mean, I definitely remember fifth grade. I know it really got everybody's attention. I don't know if I told you this story or not,
no.
but on my 10th birthday, I was at my mom's in California. Birthday's in June. So it was after school was out. And so I went to stay with my mom that summer and I would ride the cable car and get around San Francisco. We lived on Nob Hill at the time, or she did. Okay. And there were these really nice children's clothing stores in Japantown. And so I remember my mom came home for lunch that day, my birthday, and we went to Japantown and I saw this Calvin Klein jean skirt, dark blue denim with denim jean stitching, but it had the Calvin Klein loops on the pockets, right? Okay. And this would have been 1980 when everything had to have like Gloria Vanderbilt or whatever on it, because that was what was it, Izod and all that stuff.
Right.
So we went to the store. The dress skirt was like $40 in 1980. So that's a lot for a 10-year-old.
That's a lot. Exactly. That's like $1 million.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's $1 million. I had birthday money. So I didn't have it with me though. And so I was like, Mom, I really want this skirt. Really, really want this skirt. And it was my big birthday present. And she was like, no, I am not buying that skirt. That's too much money. It's also because my mother was always the person like, don't buy name brand stuff, buy something cute. And then, you know, embroider your name on it or whatever. She went back to work. I got on the cable car and I went to Britex Fabrics in San Francisco, which was like this 5-story fabric store. It doesn't exist anymore, I don't believe. But I went there and I found a bin of denim that had been on a boat or something. And it was all destroyed and messed up and stuff. So it was super cheap because denim used to be really expensive. It's kind of expensive now in terms of on the scale of fabrics, but really nice denim is expensive. And so I found this bin and I went through it and I found pieces big enough to make my little 10-year-old body a skirt. So I don't know what I paid for the fabric, but I went back home and I made a skirt and I made the skirt completely just like the Calvin Klein skirt.
Wow.
And so by dinner time, when my mom picked me up, I had the skirt on and she was livid. I mean, over the moon mad at me. And I like instantly started, I remember I instantly started crying because she's yelling at me. Like, why would you defy me? I told you no. It's just not how you spend your money. I think she was just disappointed that I had done something that she asked me not to do. And then I pulled up my shirt and I was like, no, mom, I made it. Because I didn't have time to put the waistband on it. And so her disgust turned into, oh my goodness, I can't believe my 10-year-old child made this skirt. And I thought it was the real thing. And so that was really a defining moment for me because I didn't live with my mother. And so to have her approval, you know, from the person who I thought she was, Linda Carter, coming through the airport, like Wonder Woman, every time I saw her, she was on my hat and this fabulous dress or whatever, every time I saw her. So I'm like, oh my God, I got my mother's approval. And I know that was a defining moment for me in terms of what I was capable of doing.
That's the story. Every child wants their parents to say, you know, great job.
Yes.
Those are the moments that are ingrained within our souls, that defining moment for you, your mom's approval meant the world to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was in her milieu. It was in an area where, you know, I felt like she excelled. I mean, she was in the investment business, but of course she was dressed to the nines all the time and going through her career, trying to ascend. And so she was always beautifully dressed.
Yeah.
And for her to be so surprised that I'd made this, it was a huge deal for me.
How do you see yourself and what defining moments have shaped your journey thus far?
My more recent life experience of having been married for 14 years, having two children and then getting divorced. My new moniker for myself, and I guess it's not new anymore, is I call myself a legal hustler. Some people hear the word hustler and you think, okay, bad things and this, that, and the other. So I threw legal in front of there to say, I can do a lot of things. You know, that jack of all trades thing. I'm probably a master of none, but somehow over the last, 12 years or so, I figured out how to keep a roof over my head and kids moving towards college and beyond and whatever it takes. But everyone who knows me really well, they're like, you could be doing anything. You should be doing this. You should be doing that. And I always come back to the fact that I can't say that I have the personal discipline to get up every single day and be committed to a retail operation, a production operation, whatever it may be. Prior to moving to North Carolina, where I live now, I was a high school fashion design teacher for 6 years. And that was an amazing experience. I thought I was going to like pull out my set of books and teach chapter one and then teach chapter two and then teach chapter three. And instead, I had over 250 students I saw every day. And so imagine 250 or more lives colliding. And so you very seldom got to chapter one, two or three when you figured out what you needed to share with the people in the classroom every day. And I loved doing what I was doing. I just didn't love all the hoops that went along with the public education system. So, you know, I'm all over the place and that can be a good thing and a bad thing.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I really do.
It led me down an interesting path because here I am at, you know, 50 plus. And I never imagined my life being like it is now.
Right.
And I don't, like my kids are like, okay, time for you to do you now, mom. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And it's not so much like that empty nester lost thing. It's like, what do I really want to do? I mean, my greatest commitment has been to my children.
Right.
And I guess as a result of my divorce, I really thought that the most important thing was to not have them be slighted as a result of the experience that I had. And I prayed and hoped that, you know, not having their father in the house didn't make a huge difference in their experience of him.
Right.
But I also knew that me in that moment when that all fell apart, me going to get a job meant that I was just going to be paying for aftercare for two kids. And that didn't seem fair to me because then I would drop them off at whatever o'clock in the morning and pick them up at six or seven or whatever, do homework. And that would be like their whole lives. And I just didn't think that was fair to them. So that changed a lot about my focus. When we were friends and hanging out, seeing each other on a regular basis, I never imagined myself married.
Right.
I never imagined myself with children at all. I thought I would be the woman in The Devil Wears Prada, you know, on top of some building saying, get that out of here. I don't want to see that. That's, you know, not to my standard. Right. And my life is totally different from that. So I've had to evolve and figure out what that meant for me. And I'm at a place now where it's like, what's next? So I hold very tightly to the stories of people like Kate Spade and the dress designer Vera Wang, or Samuel L. Jackson, folks whose careers and the reason we know their names was not because they were 15 when they, you know, set out on this incredible endeavor that became who we know them as.
Correct. I would just say Hollywood, they want us to believe that if you haven't made it, whatever made it means, by the age of 27 or 30, somehow you're never going to do anything. Right. But that's not the truth. I believe we start to come into the best parts of who we are once we experience life and the ups and the downs. Like you said, Vera Wang, Kate Spade, Samuel L. Jackson, even Viola Davis.
Right.
These are some of the people where their career didn't take off to like their mid-40s, early 50s. Yeah. So I would like to ask you, though, how have you changed since becoming a mom? We've known each other for 32 plus years.
I was about to say, don't even say it.
I know, I don't want to say it. I should beep that part out, like, boop. I know ways in which I have seen you change over the years in a beautiful, blossoming, I'll say lotus flower way, right? Mm-hmm. But what have you noticed about yourself since becoming a mom?
Well, I think the biggest change for me, well, a couple of things. I mean, I'm very open about the fact that I dealt with two horrific bouts of postpartum. After having my two children, I started my educational career. I probably was pregnant when I started my educational career with my son. Mm-hmm. And then when he was born, I took off some time and ended up in public education and in a high school in Prince George's County, Maryland. And probably about, he was 7 months old when I went back to work. And 5 or 6 months after that, I really, really crashed. Mm. And so a couple things happened. One is, you know, motherhood in general has changed my whole ability to like plan and figure out how things are going to go and map out this is exactly what it's going to look like on this given day, because you're not only responsible for yourself, you also have someone else who has needs, wants, desires, and you know, toothache. So, you know, those are the small things in terms of, you know, how things happen, but you can make all the to-do lists you want. And then you'll look at it 2 weeks later and be like, well, I got these three things done. they were on my list.
Yeah.
And that's what I was talking about with teaching even is, you know, you have a plan and you learn to deal with the changes and the things that occur each and every day and to go with the flow. And
so what are some of the challenges you have faced and how did you overcome those?
And challenges in what milieu do you mean?
Could be life.
Well, the biggest challenge that I faced is I deal with depression and I want to say, I'm not going to say that 100%, but when I first experienced it, I think it's kind of been diagnosed as like postpartum was the onset. You know, women generally have something that changes about their bodies or something when they have children, either your shoe size or, you know, people say, I can't get this weight off or whatever it may be. But I truly believe something changed in my brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. I dealt with depression after Vincent was born. I went back to work when he was about 7 months old. And by the time he was about 9 months old or so, I was in big trouble. I remember sitting in the cafeteria in a faculty meeting. I was teaching high school at the time and thinking, ooh, why am I even here? And if it had not been for him being alive, I'm not sure that I ever would have been able to figure it out in terms of, okay, well, I got to hold on and figure it out for this kid. I got to figure it out for this baby, you know, that kind of thing. Right. And thankfully, a nurse in the hospital where I had him, she was this little lady who came in and just happened to mention to me, you know, you may have some challenges with your mood and all that. And no one else was talking about that because they were thinking about, you know, my physical health.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant with Carter. And so I think after Vincent, I started taking some medication, some antidepressants. And then I got pregnant with Carter and I stopped. And I was concerned because I still didn't feel good. My kids are only 2 years, 2 months apart. And so I still didn't feel real good, but I knew I was pregnant. And so I didn't want to stay on the medicine. And, you know, I knew there was some residual medicine in me, but I was like, you know what? I don't want to be 15 years down the line worried about, you know, having hurt this child because of the medicine I was taking. So I stopped taking that. And then after her, I was nursing for a while, about 6 months. And then I was like, I can't do this anymore. I need to get back on some medicine. So I've been on antidepressants for 20 some years, different versions of them. You know, a drug company had a situation where manufacturing plant closed. I've had, you know, trying different things. I guess your body gets used to one thing and it doesn't really work anymore. But it's a scary, scary, scary situation for me, because even changing medicines can be horrible. You got to come off of one thing and get on another. And the turnover is 4 to 6 months or something for it to actually see if it's going to work for you. There are new tests out now called a genocyte test that actually shows which class of antidepressants, or the way this one works, will work better for you. And that changed my ability to stay within the realm of the things that might work better for my body chemistry, which is an amazing development. But my depression has affected my life a lot. You know, I was married before to someone who, my kid's father, who just didn't understand it, didn't have a whole lot of interest in figuring out what was wrong. I was, you know, my mother is a person who doesn't do well in medical situations at all. It's super so optimistic that she's unreasonably out of reality or whatever. So I didn't really have anybody to turn to.
Yeah.
And that caused a lot of challenges. We have a sorority sister who is a psychiatrist and a superstar in the industry. And she literally left her residency and flew down to Maryland, where I was living at the time, and got in bed with me for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So my mental health has been a major challenge for me for years and years and years and years. And I think that, I don't know, just my upbringing and the fact that, you know, I grew up with my grandparents, always wanted to be a part of a nuclear family. I thought getting married and having children and all that, I didn't understand that the role as mom or wife would not satisfy that part of me that was never a child. And so I've always dealt with, you know, wanting a family, wanting to do stuff that I say, quote unquote, is normal, but, you know, everybody's story is so different.
Right.
So that's my biggest challenge, has been, you know, my own personal illness and just how people deal with mental illness, et cetera. I don't think it's held me back from pursuing what I love, but I know that it has changed my perspective on a lot of things and what's important. So I think I came into the world thinking that I needed to accomplish everything and be amazing and, you know, sit up in my ivory tower and change the world. And then having had children that I didn't even know, not plan to have, but didn't even think I would ever have, never thought I'd get married, never thought I'd have kids. It just all changed. So that's the biggest challenge I've faced, has been me and the record that plays in my own head.
Right. And how do you shift that voice in your head when you feel, if you wouldn't mind sharing, about the depression coming on? Or is there anyone that you talk to get into those bouts?
Well, one thing is I've come to know that there is an end in sight, right? That it will go away. But I honestly just kind of take it easy on myself. You know, I think there are a lot of people who wake up in the morning and they're like, oh gosh, I got to get this done. I got to get this done. They can't just sit still and just be in the moment, be in their bed, be in their house, just be. And I know that when I'm, you know, like low functioning and can't do much of anything, I'm just like, this is what I'm going to do today. And this is how it's going to have to be. I don't know if I have such great coping mechanisms. You know, therapy helps, of course, but it's hard to even like go to therapy and talk to somebody when there's not really a problem. Like, I don't have anything I need to talk about specifically. Like, this is going on with me. I just know that, you know, I feel bad. Mm-hmm. I know my situation is a medical problem, just like anything else. You know, a broken leg, you get a cast. With me, I'm like, okay, what's going on with my medicine? Have I been taking it? Did I skip a day? Which is crazy that one day of medicine for something that builds up over months, you can heal. But literally, I just, you know, I try to get outside. During COVID, I was in great spirits because I spent a lot of time just outside in the grass, outside in the air, walking around. You know, I've never been a gym rat or any of that stuff, but I like being outside. I'm not going to go hiking or zip lining or anything like that to like feel better. Right. I'm not like an adrenaline junkie, but I'll go out in the grass and read and do whatever I need to do that day just to be outside. I know, of course, being in the sun and being, you know, just in nature helps, period. It's better for you than sitting in a room that doesn't, you know, necessarily have anything but air conditioning going on or heat or whatever. But I don't know. I just take it easy. There have been times, there was a time in 2010 years ago when, you know, I spent a couple weeks outside just reading. I wasn't reading anything that had anything to do with what I was going through. I just had to take that time for myself. So I'm always in awe of women like our age who are like super duper successful and like just got it all going on, this incredible career and all that stuff. And they may have families and they may not, but I just can't even fathom having done enough work in my life with the challenges that I faced with my mental health to have ascended to those types of heights. And excuse me, I just own it that this is who I am. This is what my story is. And, you know, I do everything, even when I don't feel well, to try and support the kids and their stuff because they shouldn't suffer because I am. But I also know that, you know, if I get a call saying, and I told you this before, that if I get a call saying, hey, mom, I don't feel good or, you know, I need help, I'm there right away because, you know, even because I know what it was like to have somebody come out of their daily whatever and climb into bed with me and just, you know, watch TV, play cards, talk about when we were seven, whatever. It just changes, you know, that record that's playing in your head.
Thank you for taking time to share details about your experience surrounding depression and also how you've shared that with your kids. I respect about you that you shared this journey
that many may find it difficult or taboo to talk about.
You know, it makes me think how a lot of us women, they're men too, others who don't share their journey with depression with others, and that you've been so forthright.
I think my thing is totally that I'm going to share my story because, as you said, some people are not willing to talk about it. And a lot of people suffer. We've got, you know, a whole incredible wave after the pandemic of people who are disconnected from others. And, you know, I just can't fathom how, you know, people go through life without other people in their lives. And, you just, I don't know, like I'm hearing people around me, young people talk about dating and all that kind of stuff now and how disjointed it feels. And it's just, it's so sad because you need people. You know, when we were in college and doing our thing, we were up and down the road and having fun and going here and going there.
Yeah.
And I can't fathom a life without the connections to other people. So I'll tell my story. It doesn't take anything away from me. And prayerfully, it adds to somebody else because I don't lose anything by sharing the story at all. I'm not embarrassed by it. I see it as a medical condition like anything else. Somebody who's diabetic or, you know, whatever the case may be, something you can, an illness or a break or whatever it is that you can see, to me is the same thing. Mental health is not, it just shouldn't be seen as something, oh, she's crazy or whatever. It is a, for me, it is a lack of serotonin, you know, in my brain. It's something that that medicine, thank God, exists to help regulate it. Shoot, as women, we know we go through all kinds of crazy stuff with even the menstrual cycle.
Right.
So your hormones do all kinds of things. So imagine that on top of something else that you don't quite understand. All of a sudden, it's like, ho, something really is going on here. And I need to do something about it. I need some help.
Thank goodness you had someone in your corner who recognized the symptoms. And like you said, who was willing to come and sit with you no matter how long it took for you to find yourself again.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's coming into it. Of course, you don't know what's going on.
Yes.
And you don't know how to help. You don't know how to get help. And part of depression is the fact that you're so low functioning. So I could not do the research to find a psychiatrist at that time. I couldn't. I couldn't take a shower. So, you know, in my normal, you know, daily life, I have lists of 1,000 things to do in a day and I add to it and I mark things off and I keep on going. I couldn't do it. Still going to work. I was still teaching high school. And of course, I gave my students everything I had. But at some point, I just walked out the door. And finally figured out that when I let my sorority sister know, she said, I got you. And I don't even remember the conversation that got her there. Next thing I knew, she was in my room. So.
First, it's always good to have those people in your lives who can see you for who they know you to be. And if something doesn't feel right with them about just the normal interactions that you have. Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to touch on too is how you said that during the pandemic, a lot of things changed. And you're absolutely right in saying that people need people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My daughter just got approved by her university to start a club. And her club is completely dedicated to connecting Black young women to other Black young women, because for whatever reason, you know, this generation of kids and college age kids, they've missed a chunk of developmental stuff that happened in high school and college. They don't know how to connect except through social media. They don't know how to do it in person. I'm not saying as on the whole, but in general, there's a change that is not necessarily positive for development at that point in your life. You need to go and I don't have to be in the club, but you need to be in the church group. You need to be in the club. You need to be out in the park together. You need to get on a road trip together. All of those things are part of being a young adult, and they're missing all of that stuff that goes on. I mean, all of us know what it's like. You can be at home with somebody all the time, but if you go on a road trip with that person, it's a totally different thing.
I agree.
And they're missing all of those strange things that human nature does when you're in spaces with another person. And so it's very sad to watch, and it's hard to tell them, well, just go do blah, 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 blah. Because as a group or as a community or as a age group, they're not doing it. So you can't.
And they don't know how to, right?
Right. They don't have any of that skill set. And so I think that's, of course, if you've got a kid who is already, you know, not thrilled with life, and then there's none of that, or there's nobody to drag them out and say, come on, let's go to this. It's very sad. It's very sad. And I don't know. I don't have any solution for fixing it. I just know that always it can weigh heavy on your mental health.
Right. Well, I think, Carter's doing a great job with recognizing that and also helping connect other individuals. And it goes back to what her mom told her, what her mother taught her. And just the way, again, that you connect people all across this world, Amber, honestly, your daughter has watched that. And your daughter's like, I know that I can do something to help connect people who are missing that part of connection.
So. No, I'll agree with that. I think that you brought that to my attention, even in our first conversation. And I've never been made aware of that. And I literally was thinking about it the other day, driving around, and then I called somebody else and called somebody else about something else. And I was like, oh, well, Trina now made me aware of it. It's kind of like when you see a number everywhere and all of a sudden it's everywhere. Yeah. That's all I know how to do. And I'm never afraid to call, because I'm like, what are they going to do? Say no? Oh my gosh.
Right. What's the right? What's the opposite of no? They can say yes.
Right. Right. What's the worst that can happen? I called somebody the other day and asked them to do something for me. And they were like, oh, tonight. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm asking for tonight, blah, 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 blah. And that person was like, no, can't do it. Or, oh, I get it. I said, okay, no problem. Because all I could do is ask. But we all have lives and we're busy and we have schedules and things we want to accomplish. But you get a lot of yeses when you're willing to ask.
I agree. And when you open yourself up and you're vulnerable and it's like a whole lot of good can come out of just asking the question.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm thankful for this time, Amber, that we have shared together. And I'm thankful for you being so open and so vulnerable with the experience of depression and how that has transformed your life and things that you do differently. I am thankful that you have shared the gift of your children with us and the things that you've taught them along the way, and to helping them become the young adults that they are today. And just as parents, I know there are different parts of the conversation that I'm going to take with me on my journey and share with not only my children, but also with friends of mine who have younger children as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this conversation is going to be far reaching and help a lot of people out there who are going to listen to this podcast. So I really appreciate you and I am thankful for you. And like I've shared with you in conversations past, I am so thankful for the gift of your friendship. I am thankful that even when I don't want to get emotional. So don't do that. But I am thankful that not only do I get to call you friend, but I get to call you truly big sister.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you just for you being you.
I appreciate that, Drina. Thank you so much. I mean, I definitely appreciate you and the time in my life where I had the privilege of getting to know you and the relationships we built at those times are invaluable to me. Mm-hmm. So thank you. Thank you for, you know, thinking I had something to share with the world. And you know, I will say to your listeners that I'm only a DM away. I'm ready, willing, and able to come and create something or build something or make something or give them some advice or whatever it may be. My moniker from so many people has been, you are the most creative I have ever known. So I will take it. I love it.
I love that. And yes, Amber would not offer that if she didn't mean it. So if you get a chance to get a creation by Amber since 1970, know that you will have this creation forever.
Yeah. Love you.
Love you too. Thank you, Amber.
You're welcome.
Enjoy your dinner.
All right, I will.
Every man for himself.
Yep.
Love you, girl.
Love you too. Bye.